This episode of the Braving Business Podcast is sponsored by, well, me. I'm PJ Benoit, and I've been in the domestic and international logistics space for over 30 years. If you need any assistance with transportation or logistics, my team and I will jump at the chance to help. Whether it be parcel shipments, e-commerce, pallets and freight, full truckload, international air and ocean, imports, exports, warehousing and distribution, or really anything under the logistics umbrella, we got you covered. For more details, please go to shipwithpj.com. That's shipwithpj.com. Reach out to me there. Mention you found me on this podcast for a special surprise. And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business Podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
Hey there, Mr. You should be Tanner because you're just coming back from a cruise, but
I know.
I'll pretend you look tan. I know you came back from a cruise. You do not look tan at all.
Hey, I look more tan than I was before. I mean, come on. But I was on a rock and roll cruise, so I was like inside a lot watching bands, amazing bands.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Off
this,
from the 70s.
Cruise, I know you were looking forward to it. It was
amazing. It was a gift that my wife's ride or die, her best friend, gifted us for her beating cancer. So it was bands from the 70s and actually some from the 80s, some from the 60s came on. But like ELO was on there, Sheena Easton.
No way.
Oh,
Sheena
yeah.
Easton. I used to love Sheena Easton.
Oh my gosh, she was amazing. Jefferson Starship was on there. Kansas was supposed to be on there, so they dropped out. So Night Ranger was on there. Air Supply, like it just all these bands. It was so much fun. Yeah.
Get to hang out with any of them, like off stage?
I did. Like I hung out with the guys from Ides of March. I got to shake the guitarist's hand from Boston, which was really cool. It was a lot of fun. Like I met the guy who wrote the song Eye of the Tiger from Survivor.
That's amazing.
It was just a lot of fun.
Duke, who's the most famous musician you've ever met in person?
Oh shit. Steven Tyler.
Oh wow.
Nice. That's a good one.
Yeah. We were at the mall shopping. He was with the two hottest girls I've ever seen and he was wearing a dress. But that guy
sounds on brand. That sounds on brand.
Gave me a big hug, posed for a photo, and it was a great time. Yeah. Fantastic. Nicest guy ever. Yeah.
Wait, were you wearing a dress as well? I guess that's the question.
I'm not going to comment on that one.
Let's leave that to the audience's imagination. PJ, let's go ahead and introduce our wonderful guest.
Well, you know what? I am tickled pink to introduce Mr. Duke Kroll.
You are. You're literally tickled pink. Look how pink this guy is. He's the pinkest guy ever.
See?
Go ahead.
I don't know where to take that. Thank you very much. So Duke is a gentleman that I met last year at the Co-Create event that I was at in Vegas. Duke was a powerhouse in that event. Also, super down-to-earth gentleman. I had so much fun hanging out with him. So Duke is a visionary and a pioneering force in the e-commerce domain. His journey, and of course he's today's guest, but his journey is part of being an Amazon whisperer, part Spartan warrior, and 100% unapologetically himself. He went from flipping products on eBay at 15 to becoming one of the most respected voices in the Amazon agency world, managing thousands of brands and even launching 7 of his own. But Duke's story isn't all about just business. It's about transformation, resilience, and doing hard shit literally. After facing a near-death battle with alcoholism, losing over 100 pounds in 6 months, and that's an amazing story, and walking away from a high-paying job to build his company Seller Slice, Duke rebuilt his life and his company from the ground up. Now he's running Seller Slice, hosting the Vertical Edge podcast, training as a CrossFit athlete, competing in endurance Spartan races, and helping brands crush it on Amazon, all while raising a family and staying grounded in authenticity. And also, Duke's motto is extreme ownership. Do hard shit and be real. And, Tal, you didn't know this, but today, Duke's spending his birthday with us. So happy birthday, Duke. And welcome to the Braving Business Podcast.
Thanks for having me, PJ. I'm excited.
Oh, we are glad to have you, and happy birthday. I did not know that. And let's rewind to another birthday. You were 15 years old. You were flipping stuff on eBay. I'd love to know, that's not, you know, most people that are 15 years old are flipping burgers at McDonald's, not flipping stuff on eBay if they're working at all.
True.
What was it that drove you? Was it money? What were you chasing?
I mean, I've never been good at school. I never was into school. I got by, right? But I was always hungry for money. And it was more like I could go work at, you know, McDonald's with my friends, Whataburger with my friends, but there's no money in that. So I was talking to a guy, he was in college, he was older than me. He's like, dude, this is what I'm doing. And this is where I'm getting all my fun money. So we started going to places like Goodwill or, you know, just finding things around the house that, you know, were basically free, posting them on eBay. You know, I could get like a DVD player back then for like 10 bucks, sell it for 35 or so. I did that 10 times. I made more money than my friends were making at Whataburger. You know, it was that easy. So
you saw some low hurdle opportunities and you made the most of it, which I think is really kind of the name of the game, right? Like when you're hustling and you see those opportunities and making the most of it, I think that's the American dream, right? It's kind of the American spirit.
Well, I saw it as it was really easy to do, and I made a lot of money doing it, you know, making 3-4 grand a month at that age. You know, I could do whatever I wanted to do. I was just a boy that grew up on a ranch, didn't have much money from that stance. And so that was my income, just to have fun and hang out with my friends. And then I had friends that started doing it, like, hey, bro, how are you making this money? And then we started doing it together, and then it slowly built over time. And that's where I started.
So you've done like a wide array of things. You've done ballroom management, which I would love to understand how you got into that. You've done photography. You've done these Amazon agencies where you're helping these brands like launch on this mammoth platform that is ubiquitous today. What's the common thread that you see through all of these like very different worlds?
The common thread of how I got into them, essentially.
Well, like what's the common thread that you see between like working in ballroom management and doing like photography on your own and helping people launch, you know, through Amazon? Like, what does it take to be successful through all those?
I mean, you just said it, helping people. Like if you're out there and you're putting yourself out there and you're putting good things out there and you're trying to help people and add value to them without the expectation that they're going to do something for you, you're always going to be winning. So whether that's doing the ballroom, doing the photography, every one of those things except for the ballroom happened because I helped somebody and it turned into a better opportunity.
Very cool. All right.
So let's dig into that a little bit. So I really love the simplicity of that. Help people and good things happen. That's actually, it's a pretty good motto to live by, not just professionally, but personally for sure. But tell me, where did that come from for you? Like where did that mindset come from?
I think it's just the family that I grew up with. Everybody that I grew up was very helpful in our community, whether that was through church, with our family, with anything in general. We were just the family that helped somebody out. If somebody was down on their luck, if somebody was having a bad day, if someone's kids were sick, you know, we were the family that came and helped you. We didn't have a lot, but we definitely helped. My grandparents, for the most part, raised me, and just, you know, good old school, like Catholic farm people, right? It's like someone's in need, you help them. We're always in the community helping people. There's never an expectation to receive in return. But over time, you know, I noticed my grandparents, they were fairly well off on average. And I think it just came from their mindset of always looking to help. Like my grandfather, he had a mortgage company. And, you know, it was starting to fail, you know, around 2008 when everything started to fail back then. But he kept that business going for another 10, 12 years, didn't make a dime because he said, my employees built this wealth for me. So I'm going to make sure that they're taken care of as long as I can. And the only reason the business closed is because he passed. So I think that mentality from those two is really where it comes from.
So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I know we didn't mention on the front side, but you have a big family. If you don't mind sharing with the audience exactly how big.
I've got 6 kids and a wife.
Okay, so that's a dog. It's a pretty big family. Yeah. And you obviously learned some great values about caring for other people and putting other people's needs at least on par with your own. I'm not a huge fan of ahead of your own. I think it's fair that we should take care of our own interests. There's no shame in that at all. But caring about other people, I think, at least on par, is certainly admirable. And I think, generally speaking, also pays for itself. But you took a big leap. You had a great paying job, and you had this big family, and you really believed in Seller Slice, and you wanted to go pursue that, even though it entailed taking a very significant pay cut. That had to be really, really scary. So I want you to talk about working through the fear and what pushed you to make that leap anyway.
Well, I mean, I've always been entrepreneurial. I've always wanted to do it. But it was a specific day. I was working for this company. They were a large agency, and we flew up to this meeting because we had just acquired a smaller agency. And we were all sitting around a table, and it was me and my current business partner. And we're sitting there listening to how our jobs are going to change, the new expectations, and what the future of the company looks like. And we realized the whole future of the company revolved around two people, him and I. And so we decided to go to a football game that night, and we were driving back, and both of us had the same thought in our head. It's like, if people continue to build companies around us, because we had been at previous agencies together, why are we still doing this? And it was that concept in our heads. It was like, we just need to do this ourselves. Now, I was more aggressive about it. You know, I have a big problem with authority, and I don't like working with anybody. And if you asked anybody who is my previous boss, they would tell you I was difficult to work with. But the work that I did is the reason that I was there and why it was so successful. Because I'm unapologetically me, and I'm going to do whatever it takes. But I decided that I had to revert that, and I actually had to do what I was supposed to do. And I took the jump immediately. The next week, where I said, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do this. I had the strategy mapped out. I had my first client that was going to cover half of my salary, and I just made the leap. It didn't even look back. Haven't looked back, because my whole world has changed because of that one decision.
So, okay, that's fair. Everything you said, I respect, but I didn't hear anything about fear. So are you saying you were fearless about it? You were taking this big pay cut. You have this big family to take care of. You're not worried at all.
I think that the fear was intrinsic, but I had enough faith in myself that it was going to be a reality. I mean, I won't lie. When we started the first business, taking that pay cut was monstrous. I had this new beautiful house that I just bought. I was worried about that. I had kids. I was worried about that. And I'll tell you what, it was painful. That first year, I mean, it got so bad I lost my bank account at one point. And it was awful. The stress was real. I developed a drinking problem, a really heavy drinking problem. So to say that I was fearless isn't true, but to say that I had faith that it was going to work and it was what I was supposed to be doing would be what drove me, because I knew that this was the only way I was going to create the best possible life for my family.
Yeah. So going through something like that, right? Like it sounds like you also started adding to your pile. Right. Like, so you left. What industry were you in when you're saying these agencies? What was that?
They were Amazon agencies.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I was part of the first ever Amazon agency. And then I got poached from there. And then I helped someone else build another one, got screwed there, and then got poached again. And then I was done.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So, all right, we're going to get back into your personal life there in a little bit. That's for sure, because it's super interesting. Let me get to your brand. So you've launched 7 brands. You've managed Correct. Thousands of others, and you're still toeing the line. You're still pushing on, right? So yeah. when people are about to start their e-commerce journey, what do you think is one of the biggest myths out there that people still believe about e-commerce success?
That you can do it all just on Amazon. Mm.
And why is that?
Say more.
Because Amazon is the most powerful marketing platform on the planet, but it's super expensive to play. You can do the slow and steady approach and you'll eventually grow. But the whole world revolves around e-commerce. If you don't have site, social, and Amazon running on full steam, the success potential is severely limited. The number one trend of 2025 is social proof. So if I don't have social media making people aware of my products and my brand, especially with the younger generations, I won't be successful. If I don't have my site to validate me as a brand and show that I'm awesome, then I lose influence. And then if I don't have Amazon where everybody goes to shop, I'm failing already. And all three of those need to drive each other. You can't just have one. 10 years ago, just Amazon all day long. Today, no way.
All right. So would you say, I'm curious what types of mistakes you think e-com founders make that drive you crazy. Is that the one or are there others? And what would you suggest people that maybe started off on e-commerce or they've got their business, maybe they've limped along. What would you suggest they do to course correct?
Having unreal expectations when it comes to ad spend is a big one. The more you spend doesn't mean the more sales that you get. Everything has depreciating returns. So that would be a big one. Another one is they want to invest in ads all day long, but their content is weak. Content is king. If you don't have a best-in-class content strategy, whether that's on Amazon, social, or site, you're failing already and every dollar you spend is wasted. Because if you're not converting that consumer, you're not winning. And that's all that really matters.
Love it. What else? What's another one? Like if someone was like coming up to you today and saying, Duke, what's the magic bullet? What is the magic bullet, Duke?
It all starts with passion. You have to be passionate about what you're getting into. Otherwise, you're going to get distracted, lose steam, and you're just going to give up. So me being a CrossFit guy, my next brand will be a CrossFit brand because I'm passionate about it. But then it comes down to the product selection. You have to make sure what products you're working with actually fit the demographic you're going after. You have to actually know your demographic. Some people just create product, don't know who they're actually targeting. It's like, what are you doing? You just got lucky today. This doesn't even make sense. Like, why are you selling smart home and kitchen utensils? Doesn't make any sense, right? So you have to have the products have to fit the demographic. You have to niche down. You have to identify CrossFit is a great niche, but can you have a lower niche than that that's even more impactful? And then once you've identified that, it's about what is my content strategy? Again, content is king. And the biggest thing that you can do today is on social media, work with influencers, partner with an influencer, give them 10% of your company to drive the hell out of it in your target market. If you're just doing a CrossFit brand, find one of the games athletes and say, hey, you push my content, I'll give you 10% of everything in the company. And they have millions of followers already and they'll drive it for you. And that's content. And then that can be used everywhere else. So, that's where I would start.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about that is it's true. I don't know e-commerce very well. It's not really been my domain. I take your word on that. You certainly have the track record to support the thesis. What's interesting is I actually believe that that's true even for traditional businesses. Finding the influencer in traditional businesses may be someone in the industry that has tremendous cash and not cash as in money, but as in C-A-C-H-E, someone that has
cachet
and the right connections and pedigree and takes an interest in what you're doing and believes in you. I've had multiple opportunities in my life that really grew because I had people like that around me. So I think it's a great bit of advice. I would imagine that there is some degree of prove it to me, you're not just going out there giving someone 10% without them having shown you what they're going to do for you or what they can do for you, or do you take that kind of a leap?
Well, it depends on the influencer, right? If you're able to get an influencer that's got like 5 million followers and you're able to leverage that, you're pretty much going to give them whatever they ask for. However, there has to be a structured agreement that says, I'm going to give you this X percent of my company. In return, you're going to do these things, right? You're going to post on a regular basis. Let's use CrossFit as the example. When you compete in the games, you're only wearing my gear. When you post, you're only wearing my gear. When you work out, you're only wearing my gear. And then your job is also in the community, make sure that other people start wearing my gear. Like Noble was brilliant with it. Noble, the CrossFit space was so underserved. And there was, we didn't really have a brand that we gravitated to. There was Reebok, and who cares? And so they were this first shoe brand that was like sexy. And it was like, oh my gosh, CrossFit now has a sexy apparel line. There are these awesome shoes. And everybody started wearing them. And they didn't even do Amazon. They went strict social media. They entered through the gyms. Like, they had conversation with gym owners, started making shoes available to them. And then everybody, it spread like wildfire. Everybody wanted Noble shoes. And the brilliant thing that they did, they got you in with their basic trainer. But in CrossFit, you basically need three different pairs of shoes per athlete. And they knew that. So they knew they could give away one pair of shoes for basically free and get someone to buy two more just because someone had finally created something sexy for the CrossFit scene. And they dominated. And now they're huge. And that's where they got their start. They weren't just an athletic apparel line. They turned into something to much greater. And that was their whole strategy right there.
That is amazing, as usual. So let me do a quick pivot here, because you're talking about CrossFit. I know the words together mean something. I don't know what it means in application in true life, so I'm going to leave that one alone. But you did tell us that in the pre-interview that you believe that most people really, you kind of, your mantra is like, the only thing that's holding you back is you, right? So when you're thinking about CrossFit, when you're thinking about entrepreneurialism, when you're thinking about life in general, how do you keep yourself accountable and out of your own way these days?
You got to humble yourself. You got to drag yourself through hell every day. And the only way you get better and improve as a person is by going through that hell. I mean, I make sure that the first thing that I do every day is miserable. The first thing I do as soon as I wake up is I run 2 miles. I don't get coffee. I don't do anything. I get out of bed. I put two shoes on and I run out my door. Doesn't matter what the weather is. And it sets my mind right. And just starting with something difficult like that puts you in a really solid position. It humbles you, but it also makes the day easier. You kind of get out of your way right away, you know?
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I that seems, I don't know that I would be able to survive that. My day usually starts with something quite enjoyable. And PJ was joking with me in return on, we were in our own little chat that so does his. But hey, I mean, you know, that worked for you. I think what's interesting about that, I actually agree with you that it does tend to take hardship for people to realize what's holding them back and maybe to be a little bit more real, right? Yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, your mindset is misery. And I'm not sure I agree, but it doesn't matter whether I agree. It's worked for you, right? And it came from a place where at some point in your life, you were really, really struggling. You were making some decisions that you've told us you are not proud of, particularly struggles with alcohol, right? So is this what you use to kind of pull yourself out?
Yeah. I mean, you want the story?
I'd love the story. Yeah.
Okay. So I was at CES 5 years ago and I woke up and, I felt a little funky, not a big deal. Oh, I always felt funky back then because I was drinking a lot. And, I was walking the showroom floor. It's something I've done 100 times before. And I passed out, hit the ground, and I was about to rush to the ER. My wife was there because she decided to attend that year. Thank God she was there, actually. And they said, well, you have type 1 diabetes and you have liver failure. Sweet. So what does that mean? Well, we ran your blood work and you're clearly a raging alcoholic. You have two choices, change your habits or die. I was, I'm 5'6" and I was 280 pounds. I was grossly overweight. And basically what I decided, I mean, I took the day, definitely took the day. Me and my wife went to a hockey game that night. And that's my favorite sport. We relaxed. I did some deep thinking. And literally the next morning, I decided I will never touch another drop of alcohol again. At the same time, the reason I did drink is because work gave me an anxiety. The only way to settle the anxiety was to drink. But then when I woke up, I had even heightened anxiety which led me to start drinking beer at about 10 a.m. And then I would start drinking two bottles of wine or a bottle of whiskey at night, and I would just repeat the cycle. So I cut that out instantly. I went keto instantly. And then the very next day, my fat ass at 280 pounds back then, I ran a mile. I didn't walk. I didn't jog. I ran a mile. And I did that every single day of the week, including the weekends. And then every week I would add a quarter mile. The block around my house was exactly a quarter mile, so I knew exactly what I was doing. And in 6 months, by going through that, I was off metformin. I was off insulin. I was down to 154 pounds. And then, you know, I started to realize, well, then, funnily enough, my cholesterol was out of whack. So I had to change up my diet. So I went carnivore. And then I started doing CrossFit. So I started doing CrossFit every evening instead of the running. I started running in the mornings as well as a substitute for that. And then I started competing in Spartan about that year as well. Won my first Spartan race the second year I started doing it. And just the patterns continued since then.
Wow. And you lost 124 pounds in 100 days? Or sorry, in 6 months?
6 months, yeah.
Jeez.
Is that even healthy for you to lose that much weight that fast?
Don't know, but I did it. My wife said, "You're gross. You're too skinny." That was probably one of the reasons I got into weight training. So,
yeah, you know, for those of you who are listening and not watching this, I mean, Duke looks like a linebacker. I mean, he just said he's 5'6", so he's obviously not. But in terms of his build, he's built like he could pull a truck. That's what he looks like. So this man is hitting the gym a time or two.
It's my therapy.
I respect. Yeah, I feel you. I'm actually very similarly. I'm very motivated by exercise. It's kind of my way of staying sane. So let me ask you. I mean, there's a lot that you said there, and there's something about you that resonates. You are decisive. It's the word that came to mind as I was trying to think. What am I making up here? As I see you, I see a man who's decisive, and you took decisive action in your life related to your business, and then at some point, because of the fact that you were facing obviously a decision that could have potentially, if you'd not taken it, ended your life, you took decisive action to change course. So I now understand, you know, your motto is do hard shit, and you are clearly a living embodiment of do hard shit. You're not afraid of doing hard shit, but I want to ask you, I mean, how is it that you are able to persist? You know, I mean, your challenges were daunting. You took big risks. Okay. You decided to make this massive transition in your life, health transition. I didn't hear you say AA, so it doesn't sound like you went down that road. No. And you didn't. You're nodding that you did not. Do you believe that? I mean, it ties into the only thing holding you back is you quote that PJ had cited. Do you really believe that each person has it within themselves to solve their own problems? I mean, you clearly seem to believe that, but where did you get that belief?
You know, I don't really know, but it's all mindset, 100% mindset. You know, one of the things that I do religiously is, you know, I do professional development. So I probably read at least 4 books a month. And every time I read it, I come to the same result. It's all about mindset. It's all about what you're willing to do to get what you want at the same time. And you are the only person holding yourself back. Everybody can make a fucking excuse. Oh, I can't do this because X, Y, Z. No, you can. You're creating an excuse not to go out and get it. It's all up to you. It's not more complicated than that. You might have limitations like, hey, you know, I want to be a model. And you're out of shape. Well, go to the gym. You know, you want to own a business, but you've never done it before. Great. Try something. What are you good at? Leverage those skills. Make it a reality. You know, I want to go to school, but I'm too old. Nobody gives a shit. Go to school. It's that basic. Everybody cares so much what people think about them. if you can just be 100% authentically who you are, you'll be happier, you'll have more friends, and you'll live a better life. I used to worry so much what people cared about me. I just don't give a fuck. You either like me or you don't. And luckily, most of the time they do. But I can tell you there's people I definitely rub the wrong way, and that's okay. Maybe I'm intimidating. Maybe I'm too aggressive. Maybe I'm just an asshole. But at the same time, I'm always just going to be me.
That makes it a lot easier at the parties.
Well, I mean, I'm absorbing what you said. There's a lot I agree with. There's, you know, as people who listen to this podcast know, I have a no asshole policy. I really don't believe that it's okay to be an asshole. And I'm saying that as a recovering asshole. Maybe that's a little extreme, but I certainly gave myself permission at different times in my career and life to be harsh because I felt it was deserved. And I've since learned, and I'm trying, this is still a work in progress, all of us are a work in progress, I'm trying really hard to remember that even if someone is pissing me off, even if someone is doing something that I don't like or don't appreciate. In fact, that's happened to me today. I had a very interesting scenario of that today with a person that I care about and I think the world of, who was second guessing a decision I made again and again and again. Okay. And I could have easily gotten nasty about it. And there are times in my life in the past where I absolutely would have, and I wouldn't have thought twice about it. Today I didn't. And I'm proud of me for that. But I'm really curious. I mean, Duke, is there a line? I mean, I want to be authentic too, but I don't believe that being authentic means if I feel like being an asshole, I'm just going to be an asshole.
And I think you took that the wrong way.
Okay. Tell me more.
It's not about people might perceive you as an asshole. The reason being, if you have a confidence level that far exceeds somebody else, they are going to shelter themselves. They're going to curl up into a ball. They feel uncomfortable. So that when you talk, you know, I have specific employees that have that reaction with me, but I care the world about my employees. I'll do anything for them. It comes from a level of confidence that overwhelms somebody and puts them in an awkward position, and they will perceive you as an asshole. Like, I had this sales call, this was probably 6 months ago, and there were people like this on the call, and they told my sales manager, they said, Duke is an arrogant asshat. And I was like, huh. And I went back and I looked at that call. I was like, I didn't even talk about myself. I talked with confidence. I talked about knowing what I could do to help them. And ultimately, that turned them off. And their immediate reaction is, he's an asshole. So I think it comes from, it's all about perception. Life is about perception. And their perception was, because they didn't have another term for it, is that I was an asshole. Now, I can be an asshole. Let's say you do something to my wife, you do something to my kids, you do someone that I love or care about. Yeah, I'm going to take care of you, buddy. But you draw lines in the world. And I have this conversation with my salespeople too. Your job is to go out there, talk to people, make best friends. And that can sometimes lead to some circumstances, if you're married, that might be a problem. You know, you have to learn to draw lines in your life, what you do and do not cross. Sometimes you might toe it, but you just learn to not cross it. You have to have morals and standards for yourself. And that's part of being an asshole. You got to have that line that you only cross sometimes.
No, it's really, it is really interesting. Actually, looking at the two of you, right? Like, because I also can be an asshole, but rarely, just because I'm just so damn lovable. So I think
true. I agree, PJ.
Oh, thanks, guys. both checks go.
Survey
down.
Says
most dentists agree, really. So I think, though, that, you know, Tal, you're talking about being a recovering asshole, because I think that in times as someone who is a CEO running a company and feeling all the pressure, you know, just like we all do, just like Duke does, just like every person at the helm does. We all feel those pressures, but I think that through the course of your life, through the iterations of companies that you've gone through, you have, I think you've looked back and you have felt like, I may have blown a gasket over some things that are pretty small, and I might have overreacted on things that maybe I shouldn't have, right? Like, just you're taking self-reflection and you're thinking about it, and that's awesome. That's growth, and that's great. I think from Duke's perspective, I think it's more like he's just in his own world, not world, but he's in his own realm operating. He's not acting out to anybody, but people are looking at him saying, that guy's an asshole because he's cool, calm, and collected, or he's coming across too confidently, and that intimidates me. So it's a little bit of a different kind of thing. So it's like, you know, there's just different levels of being assholes, I guess. Me, when I'm an asshole, it's very intentional. Very intentional.
First, PJ, I really feel like Duke and I are sitting on a couch on the other side of our therapist who's trying to bring us together.
I'm just trying to help you guys.
I appreciate that.
Can we
Thank
all
you.
Just get along?
No, I'll tell you what. The distance between Duke and me, and in terms of our mindset, is like a millimeter. Yeah. Like, we're very close. I know what he's talking about, because I've been in that place. I've gone on meetings or I've spoken at events, and there are certain people that really, really take to me. And then there are certain people that, for whatever the reason, they just don't like me. And I think that's really what Duke is saying. And you do need to have the confidence in yourself to Absolutely. Know who you are and be able to take that information and occasionally decide that there's not much value there and you're just not, you know, not going to do anything with it. But I am curious, Duke. I mean, as you went back and looked at that call, were you open to the possibility that maybe you had maybe not been an asshole, maybe were, you know, but maybe you had come across a little bit differently than you wanted? Is self-reflection part of your game?
Oh, 100%. Every time I have a deal that I don't close, I go back and I watch the videos and I'm like, where did I fail here? Hmm. And, you know, my first instinct with that group specifically is they don't fit my vibe. Like, I could tell we're on different sides of the planet right away. And that's okay. And generally, I recognize that. And generally, I try and change how I'm talking. I'm less aggressive. I'm more feelings-oriented. And I just didn't that day. So I did take a look, and I do realize that, yeah, I probably slipped up there. But that's how we learn, right? Thank God for call recording. But ultimately, you know, yeah, I mean, I do take a look, and all I can tell you is that, you know, I've taken action since then. I do focus on it when those opportunities arise. But at the same time, if someone's not going to like who I am and I represent my business, they might not like my business, and maybe it's just wasted time. So there is that.
I think it's super important, though, that you are saying all this, but also showing that you are taking the time to do that self-reflection, to look at that feedback, to have enough of enough curiosity to sit there and say, you know what? What am I doing wrong? Or why did this fail? Or why didn't this happen the way that I thought it was going to unfold? Because that's how you grow, right? And I think that that's a really important point that all of us entrepreneurs need to understand, is that even though we might have the best widget in the world and we might have the best proposition that we think is out there, sometimes it doesn't land right. And these tools that Duke is talking about, making, you know, recording yourself and going back and doing self-reflection, just like Tal was talking about, and like really trying to learn and better yourself and reading 4 books a month and all these things, all these tools that people try to do for self-betterment and self-empowerment and all those things, that all helps you grow to be just better leaders and better entrepreneurs later. So I think that's great.
Well, let's talk about the last part, right? So you've got 6 kids and a wife and a dog. What kind of a father are you? How are you? How are you bridging your personality professionally, and how are you as a man outside of the workplace?
I'm still extremely passionate. You know, I've been spending all week with my son doing hockey tryouts. So, you know, my day ends at 5 o'clock. I've done the gym. I've done everything by 5 o'clock. which means after five, I'm my kids and my wife. So taking daughters to dance, taking sons to hockey, I'm involved with their activities. My wife and I do a date night once a week. You have to have that balance. If you don't have that, you're nothing without your family. And, you know, I do everything that I do for my family. And if I didn't have my wife, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So
if your children were, and I don't know how old they are, what's the age range of your children?
18 down to 9 months.
Got it. Wow. Okay. So probably not the 9 month old, but if we take the kids that are capable of sitting quietly, if they were to sit and observe you, on a work call, would they recognize you? Would they be able to see their dad, or would they see a different version of
work
you?
Dads.
My second oldest, she's 16. She actually just turned 16 this week. She actually routinely goes online and looks for stuff that I'm doing. She likes to show people the podcasts I'm on or the events that I do. She thinks it's really cool. And she always says, that's my dad. So I would say that in life, just like in business, I'm the same person. Now I'm a little bit more compassionate when someone scrapes their knee or makes a mistake or, you know, but it, you know, I'm hard on them when I need to be hard. You know, in my house, we say, yes, ma'am. We say, yes, sir. But we still have fun. You know, if I have extra money, we're going to drive to Dallas and go to a Stars game. You know, every summer we're going to go to Disneyland. You know, we're going to do these things together because this is why I work, so we can do those things. So, you know, my grandfather, he was a hard ass, but he was probably the nicest man alive. And everybody respected him. I mean, when he died, he had 1,600 people at his funeral in a small town. Mm. So it's like, yeah, I do everything for my kids. So I might as well just keep doing what I'm doing and do it the same way.
That's amazing. What, you mentioned your podcast. Tell us all about it.
Well, it's a little bit on hiatus right now. But the concept is to have professionals in the space but identify what makes someone go past the point of success that they thought they would hit, you know, something like that.
Okay.
So I'm working with an agency right now that wants to go with me. We'll see how long that takes. It's been about 3 months trying to figure that out. So I wouldn't worry about it too much right now, honestly.
So let's end with this. You've reinvented your body. You've created this great business. You clearly are someone who has a very strong, as the word I used before was decisive, mindset. What does success look like for you, say 5 years from now? What does 5 years from now look like for you?
You took my question. I was going to ask him that.
Oh, the one thing that I've learned very recently, and it's probably since Co-Create, honestly, PJ, is your network is your net worth. It is a true statement. Mm-hmm. Not to saying that I want friends just for money, but as you grow in business, you start to leave people behind and you have to replace those people that energize you, that excite you, that you can partner with. You know, some of the people you've had on your show are now good friends of mine. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, others like that in that space. You know, I'm really good friends with founders of major companies, you know, Chris, Joe, you know, people I talk to every day. So it's about expanding my network and getting opportunities from that. My opportunities in the future is I want to be on the board of 7 different brands or 7 different agencies. I don't want to be just doing 1 or 2 different things. I want to be sitting in the room and strategizing about how we blow shit up together. That's really my goal. You know, I would have said 3 years ago, I would have said I want to retire in 5 years, but I personally don't think I have that in me.
Get too bored.
Yes.
Well, you know why? Because you are part of a motorcycle club. You race Spartan races. You do CrossFit, which again, still don't understand, but also you tend to take dares. So as a last question, what is the craziest dare? And I wish I knew this when I saw you in Vegas, because I could have come up with some stuff. What's the craziest dare that you've taken and did you regret it?
I mean, I could tell you one that I regret. Let's see, but craziest dare I've ever taken. I mean, a lot of them.
Well, tell us one.
What's appropriate for your podcast would be the question.
There's nothing inappropriate. You could go anywhere. So long as you didn't assault anyone. Anything that we have to report the authorities is definitely off limits.
No, I mean, I've shot bottle rockets out of my asshole before.
That's interesting.
I snorted a Carolina Reaper before.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, that was a miserable experience. I'm lactose intolerant, and I drank a gallon of milk afterwards to like get rid of the burn. That did not work, nor did it work the next day. I'm not afraid of a dare. My kids use and abuse that left and right. So I guess those would be a couple of examples of just things that come to mind.
So you snorted?
I'll tell you what, I have a great idea. And that is I'm calling on our audience to send in a suggested dare for us to send to Duke. And I don't know, we'll give away something. We'll give away a prize to the greatest dare. And regardless of whether Duke chooses to do it or not.
I won't turn it down.
Oh, geez. Don't be so sure.
Yeah.
You haven't heard from our audience, my friend.
Be kind. Be kind to Duke, my lord. Wait, so you snorted a Carolina Reaper. It's like 1.3 million Scoville units, which is like one of the hottest peppers around. And then you drink a gallon of milk, even though you're lactose intolerant.
I knew it would get rid of the burn.
It got rid of something.
It would get rid of something.
Yeah. No, my uncle brought it to my house one. This is back when I was drinking, so that added to it. But he brought it to my house.
I'm shocked.
It was for Halloween, and he said, "I got these. I dare you." I was like, "Shit!" And he chopped it up, and there I went. So
Oh boy. Okay, remind me not to party with you.
I don't party anymore, bro. You're all right.
That's right.
Don't party at all, man.
I know.
Guy you've become, Duke.
We still had a good time.
There's a middle place. There's a middle place. You don't have to drink to have fun.
No, that's true.
I'm the DD. I go and I watch the chaos nowadays.
He did. He watched all the chaos in Vegas. That's for sure.
Oh man, that was an interesting night. Yeah,
there's a lot of chaos in Vegas. PJ was there as a panelist, as I recall. Actually, is representing Braving Business, if I'm not mistaken.
I was.
Very nice.
Represent well, didn't I?
You did a great job. Yes.
Thanks, man.
Did he? That's great.
Yeah.
You're the first to say that. Everyone else said he's just stunk up the joint.
He was one of my favorite people I met at the show. So. Yeah.
Our guest today was Duke Kroll. Duke is a pioneering force in the e-commerce domain. He is an Amazon whisperer. He is someone who very clearly is unapologetically himself. And he runs the company Seller Slice, which is a company that, if you're out there in the world of Amazon agency or looking for someone to help you develop your brand, I think Duke just might be able to help you. And in the show notes for the podcast, we'll provide some contact information for Duke. Duke, thank you so much for being our guest. Try not to snort anything too hot or drink too much milk. And certainly don't put, don't put any foreign objects in places they don't belong.
It's been a pleasure
having you on, friend.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Take care.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.